Thank you, everybody, for coming out. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Dawn and Scott. Thank you, Silas, for that good reading. I was particularly appreciate your use of repetition, which I think was really good, moving the work forward. And then, Kevin, your use of, wherever you went, description and detail to create images. Thank you. So I'm, maybe I'll stand over here a little bit. I'm going to read just a little bit from my book. I don't know if you can see it. This is my mother and dad. And they didn't know each other when they were like little. They fused the photographs together. But a lot of people, I didn't know they knew each other back then. And I, it took me a while to write this book. Each poem was a traumatic experience for me. I cried the entire time. And I'm glad that I got it out, because I think I can live better now. I can live with less heaviness in my life and looking more toward a future of, sunshine. So I want to read several poems from the book, but I also would like to read some other ones that I have another chapbook coming out in October, and I would like to read a couple of those poems too. So I have everything set up here. Is this better if I stand like this? Better to hear? I'm perfect. I rarely hear that kind of thing, but thank you. So, I probably will, trying to figure out what it is it that makes someone perfect as they stand in front of a mic of a lot of people. In any case, I want to start with the prologue of the book. And it's, I'm from like a small coal mining town. And during the 60s, my dad was beaten by cops and sent to a state hospital for the criminally insane. And all he did was be a black man with a voice. And this, he was taken in June of 1965. And then the Voting Rights Act was, signed into law by LBJ in August 6, 1965. So he didn't get a chance to vote that year, and he didn't get a chance to vote for the next 6 years. With everything that's happening, putting people away so that their voices are not counted. So the prologue begins. There is no margin on these pages of skin history. We locals know each other, what we do and why. How we say what we mean. How we live together huddled in small spaces between words where dirt roads intersect and curve back to a past not distant from the present. We know who we are in the equation of a certain period of time. Time when a rabbit's foot, a wishbone, a juju mask, a four-leaf clover, a bluebird, or a falling star will not bring good luck. Time when we know we need a body of courage. We know it is not a messiah. We know it is an everyday woman and an ordinary man. And then my next poem, my dad, you probably can't even see this, but there, it's an effort. But my dad was very dark skinned, and his mother was, first of all, a jazz pianist. And then somehow she got saved and became a sanctified evangelist preacher. And she had three illegitimate children. And my dad was the last one. And he was the darkest one. So she sent him to live with her mother to raise, and she kept the other two children who were light-skinned. This is called Dark Boy. It is a story about my father. My mother whispered it even when he wasn't around and couldn't hear. The first time I heard the story, it scared me. It began with his mother, Ruth, who was ashamed of my father's skin. It was too dark for her to love. Until then, I didn't know love apart from skin. It is how I began to notice difference. unlike Ruth's first boy born red-brown and the girl born with cornmeal yellow skin, my father's complexion was a curse cast on Ruth's belly. He was born dark and illegitimate. Evil from the start is how people judged him by his color. He was mistaken enough, yet became the stain that his mother made, and because of his darkness, he was labeled troublemaker by sight. Again, my father was, as I said, taken to a state hospital for the criminally insane, where they literally stomped people to death. And everybody that they killed, they really got away with murder. And everybody that they killed on the death certificate had something about the heart. Heart attack, angina, you know, some of those other things, but never what the truth, you know, really occurred. So this, I imagine my father at the gate to the state hospital for the criminally insane. He stands, a man, forced, handcuffed. A ray of sun glints against gentle brown skin. The light makes his red-rimmed eyes flutter like two petals of a rose that shiver in a storm. He looks up at bars until the back of his skull rests on the top of the spine, the cervical vertebrae that allows him to nod, yes, sir, no, sir. Bars go up high like the beanstalk Jack climbed to a make-believe land in the sky. Unless the black bars turn into magic beans, there is no geography of imagination beyond them. No fairy tale made real except for the smell of blood, the sound of bones being cracked. Ordinary men, like giant ogres, will keep the man gone dead, hidden in sprawling beauty of Pennsylvania mountains. They protect years of stone-hard infrastructure. And as any family man would, they work to take care of their own castles, wives and children they love, and they are violent too. Inside the gate, they redistribute weight of duty. Their at-home bodies swell with growl and bark, cryptic as any god who breeds fear. Monster feet and steel-toe boots demand to keep the head turned away from truth. Keep the body tense, braced for the next kick. When they finish terrorizing their captives, all creep home, transform, become normal as any man who wants his children to have more than he ever had. They say, that's how it is. I did my job. Thank you. Then, of course, I was in school. Maybe I think it was the ninth grade with Mrs. Logsdon in biology class. And she had us doing lots of things which I thought were pretty good at that time. And one of them was to take a frog, and she took all the pieces and put in a little piece of plastic. And then we went around the room, and we had to, for the test, identify the whatever it was that was in the plastic bag. And I just thought that was interesting at that time of just, rather than just sitting at a desk and just listening to what the teacher said. So this is anatomy of a system. A jar of formaldehyde at the back of the room is labeled bullfrog. Kingdom Animalia, phylum Chordata, class Amphibia. The biology teacher stands in front leading a review, holds up each organ of a frog's dismembered body, clasped in tweezers, each part dangles. I don't know yet how men are classified at the state hospital for the criminal insane. I only know that my father is there. I don't know that men are labeled race, black, Negro, gender, male, attitude, threatening mental capacity. 12-year-old notes, seems to have his own philosophy about his place in society. Diagnosis, schizophrenic. On the day of the test, the frog is spread around the room. Each piece of its innards stretched on a bed of cotton is held taut with straight pins to keep it from shriveling. Clipboard in hand, I walk to each station, identify the organ or glob of flesh. A white boy behind me pokes the hard edge of his pressed particle board into the small of my back. He pushes to see my answers. I don't know yet the answers institution officials give to questions about the death of a man, that when his body is exhumed, it is empty, all of the internal organs gone, even his brain. Official cause of death recorded, heart attack. I record answers on my paper. The white boy is breathing on my neck. I hold my clipboard up for him to see. After he copies liver, I erase it, write heart. After he copies stomach, I scratch it, write large intestine. I don't know yet that guards kick a man in the stomach so hard he shits himself. His abdomen cramps for 5 years. For 3 months, he pisses blood. When the bell rings, I erase testes, write brain. I don't know yet that my father will be systematically erased for 6.5 years, that he will rewrite his life as he reorients his body to not being pinned down. Now, thank you. Thank you. At first, when I was reading some of these poems, I was like shaking like a leaf. I was like, I don't know if I could get through these myself. So I ended up going to college, and that's a whole other story, I was the only African-American girl in a class of 398, and it was quite a thing to see the difference between an education given at a school that where rich kids went and had everything, and a school where, you know, black kids went and didn't have that much. So when I got to college, I could tell the complete difference between the two. And before I got there, of course, I was still a child. And leaving a small house for college, knowing what I have already learned. Here in the bucket seat of my brother's new Mustang, my mother on the porch waving goodbye. I see smoke from her cigarette float up. I'm already lightheaded. Try to catch my breath, make sense of silences that have sheltered me for 3 years. I'm pulling away from nights the black radio station played hits from Motown. There was always music. Dance contest in the living room, girls against boys, the Supremes challenging the Temptations. I was a fragile Diana Ross, skinny girl with a wide open mouth. Ron Rico rum thinning my voice to a high-strung vibrato. I wanted to be numb. It didn't matter if later I stumbled or crawled to the bathroom, wrenched up the music note by note, slept so hard I forgot how madly I danced in a darkness that drove me. I didn't know where I was going, only that I wanted to get to what is next. I waved back. Can she see me? Or did she stop seeing me years before as we ate in silence at the kitchen table? Where, in the measured quiet, I pictured my father not gone, his head bowed, blessing the food, his voice extended in prayer, me pretending meekness when I whispered my verse, Jesus wept. I don't cry that I carry silence with me, have thrown it into mismatched suitcases, and will wear it like old underwear to all my college classes. Nobody needs to see what has sobered me, what I carry underneath. So my dad did come home after 6.5 years. And I think I was really scared. In fact, I know I was scared because I had heard so much about, oh, people at the mental institution are crazy and insane. And I thought, here is this man who's my dad who is crazy. You know, I'm afraid to even almost go to sleep at night. But I got over that as time passed. But I did carry that for a while. So this is as he came home, and this is, he started his own business, and for the next 20, 25 years, he did his landscaping. This is what soil makes. Out of the gone dead sanctuary, a man emerges with a dream of free. Beneath flesh and inside his bones is marrow of future. Though his bare shoulders curl inward, I ache to see the muscular bulk of his back bent under the hood of his red pickup, the one he painted his name on, freehand, to show ownership. He added, and sons, hoping to pass on not a landscaping business, but ability to belong to oneself. My brothers laughed when they saw it, each falling into the other, their boy bodies soft as summer soil, as they hugged in their frailty. I did not laugh. I could see what my father's eyes held. Though I am not a boy, I picked up a rake and dragged its rusted teeth across patches of wilted grass. In each small ditch of earth, I dropped seeds, covered them with dirt, and kneeled to offer handfuls of water to grow a new start. My brothers could never dream as free as my father, to reseed, begin again in the soil of flesh, and endure tenderness of new growth. Cut and shape twigs of forsythia to prepare for a burst of yellow blossoms. Dig up half-wit stumps. Plant two yews with roots that grow straight through the eyes of the dead. Hold them tethered down under. My brothers can never be green again. No ambition to unload dumps of steaming manure. Shovel shit never, they said. Will not plant geraniums and peonies ever. And one small detail about the phone number painted on the truck, they knew it by heart. Thank you. And this last one from the book. There was a Indiana, I guess they called it a beauty contest, and I was the only African-American girl to be in it. I didn't even enter myself. Mr. Gray, he was the Little League and Pony League coach, and I used to go watch the boys play, and he said, oh, there's a contest coming up. I'm going to enter you. I think it was like $2, and I was like, oh, I don't have $2. He said, oh, I'm going to pay for you. I had no idea of anything, but... something happened that was different. American Beauty, the redress. That cube-shaped four-room structure on Lincoln Drive, the black dirt road that curves, not without the bend of backs of men and women, calloused hands softened by the steady shine of stars, flicks of carbon bodies perfectly aligned in black space could be called glimmers. By another name, children. And when I grew up to be a teacher, my parents were happy the way relentless rays bear down on the body, permeate, fuse with a deeper dust beyond the bony dump of cinders and ashes. I wish you could have seen their faces, how the violet's slender stem offered up its purple petal flora, emanated an aura, and further back in the woods, fauna and time before I taught, I was announced Township Queen. An aluminum tiara was fixed on my head. Plastic crystals dangled light, prismed in transparent hardness. At the right angle, I saw rainbows. From another angle, streaks of light did not arc into colors. White one said, black beauty. No compliment. Anger has its pinch. On the front yard trellis, what red rose doesn't appreciate thorns spiking its stem, prickly and curl-tipped, protectors that guarantee survival of the wilds of humans and other animals. So you can imagine the other contestants' ire when their intent was exposed, how weedy they appeared when asked, what is the most important thing our society needs? And each girl bared more teeth than the one before. She replied with something that seemed smart and caring, like world peace. So that. So that, and then some, just, don't have time, anyway. Okay, so I have a chapbook that's coming out in October, and it's called Elegy-ish. And what I like about, or had been thinking about, is how do the people, me, us, feel when somebody crosses the threshold, and we can only go to that threshold, and we become the ones that are Elegy-ish. So this is my mother's hair. It is over. I stroke my mother's hair. Her head is in my lap. Her body is stretched out on the couch. Mine is pressed into its arm. A man's dying has exhausted my expectation. He wrote on a scrap of paper, "Where's?" Before letters became scribble, he became unconscious, and I don't know what is where. I stroke my mother's hair. Feel her fatigue supple on my thighs as she curls, gives her head completely to my strength. Both knees are like knots on the branches of the front yard maple. The clavicle sculpted so exquisitely, I see what has been carved from years of love, shaped with care. I don't dare touch it. I'm afraid the bone will ping, that I will hear again how that day began. The doctor shut the door, left us cramped in a small family room around a table, natural as eating dinner in our kitchen, where brothers' faces begged no more mashed potatoes, though they love the way she makes them. Sister's eyes dropped. I heard the stalling in my mother's voice. To pull the plug or not, she'd asked me. No, she forced me. No, she trusted me to come to the right conclusion, and I knew what I had to say. Maybe I read this last one. I was going to try something new, but I was kind of scared. So I'm going to do Passing. It's my brother I see again in a TV commercial. I know it's him by the way the man twists his lips up as if confused, eyebrows raised in question, and the roundness of his head. The hair, brownish gray, and beady like ragweed packed with pollen. I should tell you now that 13 years ago, my brother passed away in the VA hospital. They said it was a lot of things, some kidney failure, deteriorating liver function, HIV, but I knew it was from only one thing. I used to ask where people go when they die. Not anymore. I see them all the time, alive. Alive in quick passing glances into other men's faces or in a woman's. I hear him in a child's voice like when we argued, each of us dead set to have our own way, running and ducking from rocks thrown in a sibling skirmish. Sometimes there was blood. We learned early the cost of war and recovered in the healing love afterward. Now he moves quickly through my world like a once hero. If I blink, I will miss all the times he comes pedaling his ramshackle bicycle through my mind, his southpaw arm like a dismembered body part lolling as he passes, but not before his hand reaches up to slap my cheek. And I chase him all the way to the trestle as he spins his dust in my eyes and teases. You'll never catch me. Not in a million years. Thank you.